JR rated. Sounds like a good show name, doesn't it? It just might take over. Anyways, I'm here this morning with you guys. Welcome, Dragon Squad. I think you guys know and remember me. Yes, it's only a Tuesday. It is not Big News Wednesday. It is just JR Takeover Tuesday. Oh, that's even better. You listen, I got so many of these. I can go all morning. But instead of me going all morning, I will first off invite the guest in. Good friend of ours, good friend of the show, also has a show on the network, Wozniak. We got Wozniak Lombre here with us today to join me to discuss some of today's events. How you feeling, man?
I'm good. Very happy to be here. As always, shouts to the entire Dragon Squad. Slam Dunk Dragon here checking in.
That's what I was going to ask you. I have not had a chance to find out what's been designated as your name or if you chose it yourself, because it kind of goes back and forth here.
Nah, I'm a man of the people. The people designated me to be Slam Dunk Dragon because I cover the NBA in my day job.
I thought it had something to do with you like playing ball and you got hops or something.
No. It's literally just my job.
As I was gonna say, eventually we got to get on the court because I did play before my knees got old, and we'll see if they still hold up. I'm always down for a challenge. But no, good to have you. Thank you for joining me. This should be an insightful discussion today. But first, before we even get started, though, I did want to have one programming note. As usually, you guys know, we have Indisputable up next after the Damage Report on the network. He's on Twitch. That's also with Dr. Rashad Ritchie, in case you guys do not know. You can also watch it on YouTube. It's right after the Damage Report. It is at 2:30 p.m. Eastern, 11:30 Pacific here. YouTube.com/IndisputableTYT. To watch my man, Dr. Rashad Ritchie. I was on that show a couple weeks ago or a week and a half ago, one Monday. The days all blend together. Amazing show. I'm gonna be back. I'm gonna try and make a somewhat regular appearances. Today he's got Adrian Lawrence. I mean, you know, you love the great legal mind, Adrian Lawrence. She's always there to let us know what we've got wrong and what we've got right. You know, so she's gonna be on with Dr. Rashad Ritchie this morning. It should be great. But if you're ready, Waz, let's jump right into it.
Let's do it.
As the Delta variant is spreading across the country and the world, the COVID cases are shooting up. And so it's leaving many governors, many mayors in this case, to determine what exactly to do as far as vaccinations and the lack thereof and the spread that is happening. So New York City will be the first city that will require proof of vaccination for workers and customers who want to participate indoor activities like going to restaurants, theaters, gyms, things like that. So you'll have to actually provide a proof of your vaccination records in order to enter these places and have a good time and be a regular person, I guess, to the point that we can figure that out. And it will be called the Key to NYC Pass. It will begin on August 16th and it'll start enforcement will begin on September 13th. So let's get into some of these details that Mayor de Blasio was talking about. Let's listen here.
Unvaccinated, unfortunately, you will not be able to participate in many things. That's the point we're trying to get across. It's time for people to see vaccination as literally necessary to living a good and full and healthy life. The Key to NYC Pass will be a first in the nation approach. It will require vaccination for workers and customers in indoor dining, in indoor fitness facilities, indoor entertainment facilities. This is going to be a requirement. The only way to patronize these establishments indoors will be if you're vaccinated, at least one dose. The same for folks in terms of work. They'll need at least one dose. This is crucial because we know that this will encourage a lot more vaccination. We've seen it already.
So obviously before, I think I saw this a week or two ago, de Blasio was also pushing you have to have vaccinations in order to enter this big comeback party that they were gonna have with all of these celebrities and big name artists to frontline and headline, basically a big festival concert for the summer, but you need vaccination. So he's looking for different kinds of incentives. And now it appears to be a little bit more of a direct, not necessarily incentive, but a direct mandate specifically on your COVID vaccines record. So let me get, before we bring in Waz, I want you to talk about this because I think you're out that way. So the policy, it appears to be the first of its kind in the US, as I mentioned. This is from The Hill, comes amid a nationwide spike in COVID-19. And infections driven largely by the spread of the Delta variant in people who are unvaccinated. So while New York City appears to be the first city instituting a municipal vaccine passport, the state developed its own mobile app, which debuted in March, private businesses, including sports arenas and concert halls, that wanted to require proof of vaccination could use the app, and it's called the Excelsior Pass. So, is this going to work out? I mean, there's a thing. We already got the pushback that's happening just from vaccinations itself, from a certain percentage of the public. But this is in New York. We saw how things are happening in Florida and Louisiana and Texas in some cases. A lot of times that in Missouri as well. Is this something that's going to spread, and will it work?
I think New York City is a very particular case. Me being a native New Yorker, grew up there, understanding and knowing a lot of people who were transplanted. And part of the reason why you put up with rat infested subways and 75 foot square apartments and ridiculous rent and inclement weather and you name it is that you're able to be in one of the most social cities in the world, if not the most social city. This is part of the payoff, is going out to restaurants, museums, bars, etc., right? So in New York City specifically, yeah, of course I can see this being, you know, this incentive driving up vaccinations, of course. I don't know that that's going to be the case in Biloxi, Mississippi, right? I don't know that this approach will work over there, but in New York, yeah, it makes sense to do this because this is the payoff, right? Like enjoying these outdoor social activities, leaving your house is the payoff in New York. So I do think this will work.
Well, I also wonder what the numbers are. Maybe I should have found out the numbers specifically in New York City, because I keep thinking it's on a range of like the state, you know? And that's when we could run into some problems. You go upstate, you maybe go to certain boroughs, you go out to Long Island, maybe. I'm not sure the areas from which. Where people may have more pushback, because there was those protests in New York about Cuomo and de Blasio and the things that they were doing as far as COVID response. And it was obviously based along party lines, because people were protesting it with Trump flags. You know, it was more of the you're pushing back against my president. Of course, this is before he was voted out. You're pushing back against my president, because there was those epic fights between Trump and Cuomo and then Trump and de Blasio, and honestly between de Blasio and Cuomo. So that kept going back and forth within their battles. And it turned to more of a personal thing rather than what they're trying to do for the state and the city. So, I mean, even from this aspect, I wonder if other areas, other cities may try this, specifically consider if this works for the biggest city in the state.
Yeah, and then I think, you know, incentivizing the vaccine by making it a requirement for fun is one thing. I think destigmatizing the vaccine is a whole other, right? Because, you know, I've spoken to people anecdotally in my own personal life who are on several sides of this argument, right? Like some people are just staunchly like, I'm not putting that in my body. Mm. Other people is like, well, if I don't have to, I'm not going to. And then there's other people who just see it as, you know, a sort of imperative for great health. I'm wondering what they can do to get people to understand that being vaccinated won't grow them a second nose or implant them with a microchip or some of the other stuff that is out there. And you know, the irony of all of this, JR, is that like, I think the main culprit for this misinformation is YouTube, while you and I are right now broadcasting live on YouTube. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, and there's the thing, I've got friends and family members that have discussed these types of topics via Facebook posts or via this doctor on YouTube that just said random things. And I was like, so where did you find this doctor? And that's the thing, as you mentioned, is a flood of that kind of information. And then if you, in the middle of your flood of information, then you see Mayor de Blasio sitting in front of the camera at a desk telling you how he's gonna make sure that you can't go to the gym and you can't go to the movie theater, and you can't go here without your vaccine cards. That's what they knew was coming, many of these folks that were trying to debunk this as an issue. I mean, as a vaccine is something that's not effective or useful. I mean, that spreads even to masks. So it was kind of set up for this to eventually come, because as the spread keeps happening, this is one of those things that you could easily pick. So what's happened in this situation, now they've got a little bit more fodder. And that's the thing that I worry about. It's anything that feeds into these false narratives. Just because it feeds into a false narrative doesn't mean that it's true. it just goes into the false narrative. But if people are believing it, that's the nature of the game. I don't know how to flip that scenario, and that's the hard part, really. And I mean, you mentioned Biloxi, Mississippi. I'm not even trying there. This is not gonna be a
situation. Well, you know, you gotta mention these places because that's part of it. We don't live in some siloed society, right? Like, this is a transient society. People are constantly moving from place to place. So it's not hard for something to spread from New York to Biloxi or vice versa, right? And so we do have to think about those other people. I just wonder what it's gonna take for people to, you know, sort of get over the apprehension of taking it in the first place. Because to me, it just, you know, I throw my hands up in the sense that the people who refuse to be vaccinated have decided at a certain point that they are more afraid of the vaccine than they are of COVID-19 or the new Delta variant of COVID-19, which is like, it's hard to square, like, that people have decided that. You know, and I'm somebody who took Johnson & Johnson, so I'm living on the edges of this vaccine thing, that people have decided that they are less afraid of COVID than they are vaccines, which is just, you know, it's just something that's hard to wrap your head around.
Yeah, I guess I'm on the negative side. I don't think it's gonna, I think it'll help. This whole thing with de Blasio, it's gonna help to a degree, but I don't know how many people that haven't gotten the vaccine yet haven't gotten it because they're like, well, I'm waiting for some fun things that I'm gonna miss out on. I just, whatever is ingrained in their thought process for what they think is happening, I don't think it's gonna be shaken by the threat of not being able to go to a concert or a theater. In fact, it may galvanize their thoughts further to think, let me push for harder because look, now they're really coming for me now. So anyway, so mark me as the Debbie Downer, or mark me as pessimistic on people's response to it. If you've gotten it already, the vaccine's already cool, they're gonna be open and fine with this. But I'm talking specifically to people who have it, and specifically in New York. We'll see if this stretches over to LA, because it's also mentioned in this article that de Blasio is one mayor that is requiring this, but he's not going hardcore on mask mandates. And that's more of what's happening in states like California to try and mitigate this risk. And again,
a mask mandate is a joke, by the way. It's a joke. It's silly that we're doing that. In the sense that if everything is open and in the same exact way that it was, and I'm not saying that we should close down, I'm actually the opposite of that. I just think in California specifically, there's been a lot of posturing of doing stuff just to be seen to doing something. And I think that's all the mask
mandate is. Well, like what? Like, you talking about personally people, or it's like policy?
No, I'm talking about the powers that be. Gavin Newsom, Garcetti. I can never say that guy's name right because of the wire.
Garcetti.
Garcetti.
It's a good strong name.
And because so, like, you know, for instance, last year, I remember I had went to Napa Valley, and Napa Valley at the time was just completely open, right? Like, it was kind of like you have to wear a mask when you leave your seat or something, but everything was basically open in Napa. And in LA, everything was basically shut down, right? This was like, I want to say like July or June or something like that. And everybody was up in arms because they're just like, yo, Gavin Newsom has business interests in Napa. Uh-huh. You know, these people are doing fundraisers at French Laundry at places like 2000 a plate or something ridiculous like that. And so that's what's been happening over here. Like, there's no rhyme or reason as to why Napa was a place that was completely open and Los Angeles wasn't. And it's just been people throwing stuff at the wall and hoping that it sticks. Enforcing a vaccine mandate for public places, that's hard policy right there.
And also I've just noticed a lot of people don't really follow it. Since this thing in LA specifically, it's all I can vouch for is people are following mask mandates everywhere. I mean, everyone was masking up inside and half the time outside, even when, you know, there was more evidence that it's less transmissible outside in the heat, all that stuff. But once, I think it was June 15th, 16th, whatever day it was in California when they lifted the mask mandates because numbers were so much better, then people were like, whoo, like, you know, they're stripping off the mask, tossing to the side. So the thought now of, oh man, we got to go back to doing it at least inside, the feeling has been generating already from people here. They're like, but I got vaccinated. I took off my mask. I tossed it out. I don't need it anymore. So it's a little harder to reinstitute the mandate is the hard part. And that's the way it's gonna, that's, I think that's where the struggle is gonna be. And we know how science and information works. It's going to keep flowing. And as we learn new things, you may have to respond differently, but it's hard to convince people of that. That's the hard part. So anyway, I think we've gotten through all of that, enough of that. So we're gonna take a quick break, you guys. I wanna see what you guys have to say about this. This is my first time. I'm gonna run through some of the comments. When I did this on the main show, it wasn't as clear and cut. I think I'm gonna get to you guys correctly and awesomely. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Takeover Tuesday on the Damage Report, JR Rated Edition. Joined by Wozni Lombre, of course, to discuss more things. Let's jump right back into it. You ready?
Yes, sir.
Let's do it. Your favorite Senator Lindsey Graham has announced he's tested positive for COVID. Now, you can probably imagine the things that were probably gonna be said to him and at him on Twitter, of course. But it is one of the breakthrough cases. He did point out that he has been vaccinated. So it's a breakthrough case and his symptoms are mild. Let's go straight to his tweets to see exactly the way he put this. So he said, I was just informed by the House physician. This is just as of yesterday on a Monday. I was just informed by the House physician I have tested positive for COVID-19 even after being vaccinated. I started having flu-like symptoms Saturday night and went to the doctor this morning. Now there's more layers to this about who he's been around and how he's been around them and those other folks and the potential freak out that's going on. But he continued on this announcement on Twitter. I feel like I have a sinus infection and at present time I have mild symptoms. I'll be quarantining for 10 days. I'm very glad I was vaccinated because without vaccination, I'm certain I would not feel as well as I do now. My symptoms would be far worse. So those are some of the tweets he had, and we're gonna get to some of the contacts and stuff, but that's the juicier part about this. But the way he was talking about how he's been vaccinated and his symptoms would be worse and all that, first of all, what's your first thought on this? Was he one of the ones you figured would be these senators that's pointing out that they've been that they've contracted COVID?
I think it's kind of simple whenever you're trying to read between the lines of rhetoric coming from the GOP and the Democrats too, by the way. I'm sure we'll get to them later. But to me, this just means that the money has gotten the message through to the GOP, like stop screwing around with your vaccine talk. We want to get people vaccinated. That's how we're going to get back to business as usual, i.e. our profits getting back to where they need to be. People not being vaccinated is a destabilizing force when it comes to the economy of this country. And so the money class has gotten the message through to McConnell, to the rest of the GOP establishment. Stop it. Encourage these people to get vaccinated. We don't need this tomfoolery anymore. And that's all you're seeing here. You know, obviously they were playing footsie with the whole vaccine conspiracy or vaccine skepticism earlier, right? Whether it be Fox News or other prominent people within the GOP. But again, the message has gotten through from the top because we know where these dudes take their marching orders from. It's not from their constituents, it's from the big donors, it's from the corporate class. And that's all that means to me when I see a weasel like Lindsey freaking Graham now, you know, sort of singing the praises of the vaccine.
Honestly, I felt he could have sung a little bit louder because I feel like there's one more aspect of that tweet thread he could have gone through. I've got COVID, I've been vaccinated, thankfully. I still got it, but I've got mild symptoms. These things could have been far worse. All those are perfectly acceptable, in my opinion, things to say. The only thing left is so therefore, please go out and get vaccinated because if you don't, you may end up in a worse situation than I was in. Very thankful, like that's be one more layer because they don't have a lack of declaration when it comes to telling constituents or when they're on Fox News to tell the audience, hey, you know, you might want to question that vaccine. I have questions about the vaccine. Are you sure? I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, yeah, I've gotten it. Now, at least they're admitting that's the one layer. They're admitting that they've gotten it because there's many pundits and there's many politicians who say a lot about how you shouldn't get vaccinated. And of course, they've been vaccinated because they have the information right in front of them and they don't want to die because a lot of them are old guys and they don't want to have to deal with all this. They've seen it. You think they don't have information on how this stuff really works and information about what is it that could happen to them if they don't take these kinds of precautions? It's just a matter of now letting that, or at least giving that perspective to your constituents and the people that for some reason follow every word that you say. The juicy part that I promised, let's get straight to that now. Next, now, as he mentioned, he was getting flu-like symptoms on Saturday night, according to his tweets. What was he doing on Saturday night? Let's go to that from CNBC. So Lindsey Graham attended a Saturday night party, on fellow Senator Joe Manchin's DC-based, quote, almost heaven is the name of this houseboat he's got. And that's according to Graham's office. So Graham's office put Joe Manchin and his almost heaven boat on blast. Continuing on, other senators, there was a bunch of people there. Obviously, it was a party. Other senators present at the party included Mark Kelly of Democrat of Arizona, Chris Coons, another Democrat of Delaware, John Thune, Republican of South Dakota, and Jackie Rosen, Democrat of Nevada, Catherine Cortez Masto of Nevada, and Maria Cantwell, also another Democrat of Washington. So that's just some of the names that popped up at this house party. So I'm sure all these senators that were there, I mean, again, more assumptions about vaccine standards and vaccine past that they've had, histories that they've had with the vaccine. If they've all been vaccinated, we'll see. But they're probably wondering exactly where this could land on them. And maybe we'll see a couple more cases pop up. You never know. So also speaking to reporters on his way out of the Capitol Monday, Manchin said that he did not have a party. Instead, he said, when you say party, there's no parties. Basically, there's gatherings we have on almost heaven. So we know each other and we talk to each other. Not a party. We know all. Listen. Was, it's not a party. It's just we got on this houseboat, a bunch of people got on one particular location, collected together. There was a couple of alcoholic drinks poured, conversations were had. We had some food, a couple people hooked up. It wasn't a party.
This honestly makes me wonder what Joe Manchin considers to be a party. Is it an 8-ball of coke and some prostitutes? Like what type of parties is this guy having? Like if people gather in a designated location, libations are had, laughs and jokes and stories are told, that's a party. I don't understand how this guy is saying that it isn't, unless of course he's used to more hardcore partying, JR. That's only conclusion, the only one that I could take.
It's the only one you can take because he's not being honest. Now you have to now extrapolate from that and try and figure out, so what's a party?
What's a party, bro?
Because, you know, the other part is, I'm sure he's worried about these. Sorry, one last quote because of talking about what he's worried about. So when he was asked about the party that went on, Manchin said, they asked how long this party went on. Manchin said, I don't know. Whatever it takes to eat a hamburger or two, all outdoors. All outdoors. Okay. I'm not sure if the kids, maybe Joe Manchin's up on what the kids are saying for parties and what they're doing at them. Maybe eating a hamburger too means something different than what I consider it to mean, because I'm old. Joe Manchin's hip. He's down with the peoples. He's on TikTok or something. Either way it goes. So I think part of the worry that Joe Manchin had here is if you look at that list again, first of all, the large level, these are Democrats, but you have a couple of Republicans that were on the boat. Obviously, Lindsey Graham was part of that. But you know, you have a couple of Democrats, and he's towing this line of this bipartisan nature because we all want to work together, but I'm still this Democrat that's working for Democratic goals. I just want to do it with the convincing of other Republicans because they need to work with the system too. You know, we all know what he's been saying. But there could be some assumptions about what are they talking about? What are they partying about on this boat? They're a little too buddy-buddy with these folks that they're trying to get something done with. Or actually, maybe he takes it as a feather in his cap. It's like, you know, I'm working with people that I disagree with along political, you know, lines.
Yeah, you know what people got to understand about the Senate specifically, way more so than the House, is that everybody who's in the Senate sort of views it as this great club. They're all buddy buddy. It's like a fraternity or a sorority or whatever. It's literally a club and it's very collegial, which is why, you know, if you guys will remember during the Democratic primary of 2020, Bernie would just refuse to hammer Joe Biden. He just refused to. Why? Because they've been buddies for decades now. They're friends. Like, that's the nature of this club. So Joe Manchin getting on a boat with a bunch of his fellow colleagues in the Senate should surprise nobody. This is how the culture of that, you know, governing body works. These guys and gals considered are just super chummy, no matter the party affiliation. That's just how the Senate is and kind of has always been. That's why you see these guys talk with reverence about these stupid, just, you know, bureaucratic rules that have existed for hundreds of years. They have a lot of reverence for the institution, for the club. And so again, you shouldn't be surprised when you see Joe Manchin throw a boat party with a couple of his pals from his club.
Actually, yeah. So specifically, like, do you fault him for that? Because this is the thing. Barack Obama's about to have his, I think, his 60th birthday party at Martha's Vineyard, and it's like a who's who list. It's gonna go crazy, right? And so, of course, the first question comes up is, look, we're dealing with this Delta variant. We got these influx of cases. Florida's blowing up. So, is this a responsible thing to do? Again, also with the fact that, you know, I'm assuming you're not gonna have a bunch of people at your 60th birthday party without making sure they're vaccinated. If you're an ex-president, then I would think they're trying to take these precautions. But as you can see, Lindsey Graham went to this non-party on Joe Manchin's boat and still caught it, although vaccinated. Is this gonna cause another problem also for Obama too, you know?
You know, I don't know. It seems like if you're vaccinated and you're not getting really sick, and it seems like everybody else who's vaccinated is not getting really sick, I don't see what the problem would actually be that isn't just optics based, right? Like, if we're gonna talk about, because this is the thing, we gotta deal with reality now. If we're gonna talk about what the science and the data is showing, meaning point, the last stat that I saw of hospitalizations, it's 0.001 of people who are vaccinated. Right. Meaning if you get vaccinated, this is something you can deal with at your crib, you know, on your own with no severe symptoms. What's the big deal here? You know, people are gonna see it like, I did my part. I went and got the jab or two, for those of you who didn't take the venerable Johnson & Johnson like me. And, you know, I'm gonna live my life. And I don't really see anything wrong with that.
Yeah, because that's the thing. And you mentioned, I think earlier, some of the, I'm not sure if it's the right term, but the virtue signaling that may come sometimes.
Yep.
But the thing is, again, if we are looking at the science, and then they have discovered it, we point out the whole thing about the leaked reports from the CDC and stuff that happened about even the vaccinated, how they can now spread it, even if they don't have the same kind of big symptoms. That is the only question, because I'm on this similar boat as far as fine, have your parties, because I had my cousin and I had and my wife's brother came over the weekend. There was four people, extra people in the house, right? So I don't know if I could pull a Joe Manchin. I can't say it was a party. But it was like four new people in the house, but we'd already known their vaccination status. We know what they've been up to, but you always know that there's a potential, you know. So for the people that are unvaccinated or for the people that are too young to be vaccinated, then that's the next question, is if the vaccinated have this chance to then spread it to those who are unvaccinated or not available for vaccination becomes the problem. And then do you really get worried about it? I don't know. And that's the line we have to now dance and go on and see if you're really the same person. So we'll see. I don't know. I mean, I guess I don't fault anyone, honestly. But again, it's the optics. These are politicians.
Yep.
All they care about is optics. Not about the party. The party itself, they're gonna have more of. They're definitely not gonna stop those. What they may stop is making sure people know about it. So let's take one more break, you guys. We're gonna read through a few more of your comments about this stuff. And we'll be right back. Hey, you guys, we are back on TDR Takeover Tuesday, JR rated edition with Big Waz. Let's do this some more. You ready for some depressing news, Waz?
Let's do it.
Okay. A couple of more Washington DC police officers have committed suicide. Capitol Police, DC police officers committed suicide after, in the wake of the January 6th insurrection in the Capitol. I am muted, huh? Okay, in the Capitol. So as this has happened, we're not really sure the connections based off whether or not it was based off the committee hearings that have been happening, but there's been two more as we saw that there was before. So straight from the Guardian reported about this. Washington DC's Metropolitan Police Department confirmed late Monday that another of its officers, Kyle DeFreitag, died by suicide earlier in July. That was just hours after declaring that the DC Metropolitan Police Department officer Gunther Hashida killed himself on July 29th. So on July 29th is the one that they've been talking about, but then just previous to that, earlier in July, which I don't think that story really got any legs about this other officer that also committed suicide, Kyle DeFreitag. But this second one, the most latest one, just on July 29th, came apparently after the committee hearing on accountability for January 6th occurred. So continuing on, DeFreitag, who was only 26, was deployed to protect the Capitol after police cleared the building of rioters and was involved in enforcing a curfew, is what the department said. Also, Officer Gunther Hashida, who was assigned to the emergency response team within the Special Operations Department, was found dead at home on July 29th. It's also what the department said. So in January, another police officer, Jeffrey Smith, these are the ones that previously had happened before, 12-year veteran of the force, and the Capitol Police Officer, Howard Liebengood, is a 16-year veteran, both also responded to the January 6th attack. They both died by suicide. So from the count, it's up to like four, the latest being July 29th. And that was in the wake of, as we saw, some very powerful testimony from four officers from the Metropolitan Police Department and Capitol Police officers that were threatened, nearly killed, and attacked by this insurrection mob on the 6th. It's hard for me to come up with, maybe not, but this is what my assumption would have been. A lot of the thoughts and feelings behind this were based off of the negativity that many of these cops received. The pushback, calling them traitors, saying they deserve to die. And then hearing some of this testimony could have potentially triggered more cops that were dealing with the events of the day and maybe were within themselves. Or maybe it's completely unrelated. That's the hard part. There's many people who maybe deal with these types of situations, mental health, depression, and everything. And they end up going this route, and it's always something that you wish you could have avoided. So I wonder to which case they're gonna look into this, or at least provide some kind of help for any other cops that had to deal with anything on that day, or are catching some of the post trauma that comes with dealing with the way people are treating and calling them names now. We saw it from the Laura Ingrams and the Tucker Carlsons of the world. So even without trying to connect it to these four, or at least the latest two that have died, in what ways can we help the folks that are still with us? You know, that's what I wonder is the next case we can do. Because I mean, if we point fingers, it's easy to do, but I wonder how much that will stick.
You know, I'm not gonna lie, from the beginning, I thought the framing of this incident on January 6th was a little bit off, right? I don't know, I'm somebody who felt like they kind of sensationalized it, the politicians who were at the Capitol that day, as some sort of military, it's not military, excuse me, some type of coup, some type of insurrection, et cetera, et cetera. The fact of the matter is, there was no threat that the United States government would be overturned that day. In order to have an effective coup, you have to have the military on board, and we all know the military was not on board with this clown show, this freak show that happened on January 6th. And so instead of censoring the people who were actually at the front lines, meaning the police officers and the security, i.e. the everyday normal people who actually bore the brunt of this awful happening on January 6th. I thought it was a misstep to sort of be all very pie in the sky about the sanctity of democracy was disgraced, blah, blah, blah. Like, no, actually, man, the jobs of these everyday working people were made to be miserable and hellish. People are dying. There are people who died doing their jobs that day. People who got hit with spiked baseball bats. People who were basically terrorized at their jobs, man. Mm-hmm. And the effects of this, like this was a traumatic event for those people who were charged with defending that damn building and these politicians. Mind you, again, politicians who are of means, of privilege, who have access to power. Those people are straight. They're fine. Like worst come to worst, these people can get private security. They can do all kinds of stuff for themselves. But the people who are on the front lines, the people like these officers who have died tragically from suicide, God only knows the amount of therapy that's gonna go into healing from this thing. Like there were mobs of people with weapons storming their place of work, and it was their job to put their lives and bodies on the line. That is traumatic, you know, what happened to these people. And I'm sorry, they haven't been centered in the way that I think they should have been. Because a lot of times, it's a bunch of politicians getting on TV, going on a Sunday show, and being like, oh, I was scared. I had to flee for my life. Well, guess what? These people were actually fighting them on the freaking streets, right? And I think that we should have been centering the experiences of those people from this very start, specifically when you consider the folks who fan these flames on the GOP have historically claimed to be the most pro-cop people in the world. And so, you know, we should have been centering these police officers and the horrible things that happened to them that day from the beginning. And I think we're going to see the pivot to centering them rather than the politicians who had to, you know, pick up their laptops and run.
Well, I would just hope that maybe at least as these types of things happen again, it's a little tough to directly take the pundits and the hate that comes from talkers on the air towards these guys killing themselves. And you could make that connection, but it's hard to definitively make that connection. But I would hope that at least it gives them some kind of a pause to at least go, well, maybe I had this to do with it. And centering these folks, as you're saying, I would hope wouldn't bring more of the disdain, because we know the names of the four officers that put their face and names out there. And yeah, they get a lot of positive response and support, and they get a lot of negative response and a lot of hate. And it's just those people that they don't have to put their names and faces to it. They can have a Twitter avi and then tweet out of their house, and it's just whatever it is, you know. And so that's the hard part. This is what we're pushing back against. And it's one of those things that I would hope that more of them can come out and have their names and stories be told without hatred being the response. And then hopefully without more violence or more depression and more suicides to follow. Before we get to this next story, let me do one more programming note, you guys. So we got the Nina Turner primary tonight. I'm very excited about this because we want to make sure that we have some more progressives actually elected. So this is the primary. So tune in today. It's today, August 3rd, and join Jake Uger, Anna Kasparian, Dr. Rashad Ritchie, who of course is coming up next on his own show for our live coverage for the primary edition for Ohio's 11th congressional district. Senator Nina Turner is running now, of course. And if she can get into Congress, that'll be an absolute game changer. So that's tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific, YouTube, Facebook, Twitch, tyt.com/live. You can catch on all of these. It'll be a beautiful event. Before we get out from this hour, let's get through one more. This story was, I figured I would enjoy this one. I just figured I would. Let's jump right in. Fox News Media said that it's parted ways with Judge Andrew Napolitano, longtime legal analyst on the network, following an associate producer's claims of sexual harassment. Now, that sounds like a normal story that you may hear from Fox News and maybe an associate producer in previous years because of the nature that we've seen that has been uncovered at Fox News. But there's a couple of different levels here, because this doesn't just encompass Napolitano, but also Larry Kudlow. Let's get into some of those details from Deadline. The employee's name was John Fawcett. He worked on Fox Business Network's Kudlow, the Kudlow Show. As we know, Larry Kudlow was one of the financial advisors for Donald Trump. So he's pretty much new to the network. Anyway, he works on that show and on filed a lawsuit just Monday in the New York Supreme Court against the network, outlining his claims against Napolitano specifically. So he alleged that Larry Kudlow, who's the host of another show, used ethnic slurs and made sexually inappropriate comments about women, quote, in front of multiple staffers, including himself and a senior vice president. He also claimed that Kudlow nixed the appearance of Representative Byron Donalds on the show because of his race. Representative Byron Donalds is a Republican from Florida, and he's been appearing on conservative network television promoting his brand of politics. And he's a black representative, a black Republican, which of course you can see some of the ways that he's getting pushback from general constituency there. So you can see where he may go. Now keep that in mind with Donalds, but we want to get some more details of what Fawcett had to say against Napolitano. This is the first big part. Upon first learning of John Fawcett's allegations against Judge Andrew Napolitano, Fox News Media immediately investigated the claims and addressed the matter with both parties. The network and Napolitano have since parted ways. So we don't know the details of how that all broke down, but we take all allegations of misconduct seriously. We're committed to providing a safe, transparent, and collaborative workplace environment for all of our employees, and took immediate appropriate action, is what Fox News Media said. So they said they're gonna take care of it and everything like that. So some more of the details of the lawsuit, this is where things got juicy. This is the part you may not have known. He also claimed, Fawcett, who's 27 years old again, claimed that when he started working at Fox in 2019 as an entry-level production assistant working on Lou Dobbs' show, he encountered Andrew Napolitano on an elevator at the Fox News headquarters. He alleged that Napolitano made sexually suggestive comments and stroked his arm. And after getting off the elevator, according to his lawsuit, he told some colleagues about the incident, and they immediately started laughing, is what he said. And they said, quote, it was common knowledge that Judge Napolitano sexually harassed young men at Fox News, and even happened to one of the plaintiff's coworkers, is also what his lawsuit said. So again, some of these allegations they said have happened in front of folks, people knew about it, and all this happened. First off, is this a surprise to you that Napolitano, first off, had to separate from the network from these allegations, and that also he was harassing young male assistant producers when we've seen this happen to so many women working at Fox News?
No, I don't think you can be surprised, because they set a precedent with the Roger Ailes situation, right? They basically was like, all right, it's not that sexual harassment is wrong, it's expensive, right? Like paying out all of these lawsuits and, you know, all of these civil suits and stuff like that, it costs a lot of money. So we're gonna crack down on that type of behavior when we can. Cause, you know, I remember when the numbers came out, it was like in the tens of millions, if not close to hundreds of millions of dollars in money paid to previous employees because of people like Bill O'Reilly, because of Roger Ailes himself, et cetera, et cetera. And so they, you know, the bosses had decided that they weren't gonna tolerate any of this stuff. Now, as far as the part where it's men being harassed too, I don't think it makes a difference. When you have a culture, a workplace culture where harassment is encouraged, or if not just, you know, people just turn a blind eye, then you're gonna get this. People have all kinds of proclivities, JR, and far be it for me to make a value judgment as to who people wanna mess with or who people wanna harass, right? I can't say that I'm surprised that a man would be harassed at Fox News, because that's been their history. That's been the culture of that place essentially from its inception.
But I guess it struck me more that it seems like there was a bit more protection for the men that worked around there. I mean, maybe because, as we've heard stories previous, that the men are the ones that were always on the one side of the harassment when women were on the back side of it. So then it got you. Men now being the target. I just wondered if, And maybe it's, I don't know, I guess it's a bit of consistency if you go with, you know, we don't care about the harassed men either. I guess my naivete was that they would care about the harassed men because they can relate in general, the powers that be can relate to them, and men don't like being harassed, you know, but we can't relate to women being harassed.
That's 100% true. And, you know, it's funny, a guy like Judge Napolitano, the funny thing.
I don't think I didn't know.
the funny thing is, especially on Fox News, when you see them talking about something like the trans bathroom mandate, that these people are gonna go into bathrooms and molest children and harass little girls and blah, 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 blah. you know, oftentimes it's just projection. It's like, this is how I carry myself all the time. And so I'm gonna assume that a trans person's gonna do it too, because that's me, that's my boys, that's my, you know, my peers. This is how we conduct ourselves. Why would we ever have an expectation that people don't behave that way? And when it comes to somewhere like Fox News, the proof is in the pudding that they foster a culture of harassment, a culture of berating people, a culture of, you know, inappropriate sexual behavior, right? Like, they foster that atmosphere. And so that's why you often see, you know, these accusations and this projection being lobbied to other groups and other areas of society, because that's what they themselves do all the time.
Yeah, it's a small spotlight about what happens in society in many workplaces, which is why it's still a problem. And many people who may come up and complain about it, they kind of get suppressed. And especially with a big corporation like this, an assistant producer. And again, this is why at first he did mention Austin Lawson. He didn't say anything right away after the elevator incident, just because he's like, well, I got a job at Fox News. There's some upward mobility here that maybe I can get something done and pursue my career in a way. And we know people bounce around to different networks. Even if he wasn't comfortable there, you got to establish yourself. And then you end up putting up with things. Again, this is a story that women have been dealing with since forever. So even as he points that out, it's one of those things that I'm sure many people reading and watching would go, okay, yeah, surprise. You know, this is what we've been trying to fight against for so long. Now, I want to get to some details of Larry Kudlow, because this stuck out to me almost more so than what happened with Napolitano, because just of the length of time that Kudlow has been on the network. So let's go into some of that. So Fawcett's claims about Larry Kudlow in the lawsuit. His allegations about Kudlow include a claim that a phone conversation with staff, the host said that he would like to have a quote three-way with Sandra Smith. She's another Fox News anchor. And on the call, according to the lawsuit, was Gary Schreier, who's the senior vice president of programming for Fox Business. Okay, higher up that heard it. According to the lawsuit, but he did not reprimand Mr. Kudlow or indicate that the comment was inappropriate. The lawsuit claimed that another phone conference to talk about an appearance by Representative Maria Elvira Salazar, Kudlow asked, why don't we just let the Mexicans in? He then said that we need more jalapeno pickers. And that's also according to his claim, in which he added that Schreier was on that call as well. So none of these things were addressed at that particular moment while Larry Kudlow went through all those things about jalapeno pickers and three ways with Sandra Smith. And I'm not sure if Sandra Smith was on that call, maybe, maybe not, but I'm sure she probably would have had something to say about that as well. And lastly, as I told you guys, don't forget about Byron, Representative Byron Donalds. I want to call him Johnston for some reason. Byron Donalds, who is a black representative Republican and from Florida. So also according to that lawsuit, in another phone call, he was talking about Donalds' appearance on the show, and Kudlow objected to the scheduling booking and allegedly said, no, I don't want the black on the show.
Again, not to beat this thing with a horse, beat this thing like a dead horse. I always mess that metaphor up.
I wasn't gonna correct you. I was just gonna say.
Look, it's one thing to go on Fox News' airwaves and be racially problematic. It's one thing to be Donald Trump and accuse all Mexican migrants as being rapists and drug peddlers, et cetera, and violent criminals, et cetera, et cetera. It's one thing to do that. But within the environment of a corporation, corporate is corporate, and this type of stuff gets you sued. This type of stuff gets you in court. This type of stuff costs you money. And if we know anything about any corporate environment, the first thing they ever want to do is cover their behinds. That's the number one rule of corporate. Rule number one, first, cover your own ass. And if you have an employee who's comporting himself in this manner and is being this bombastic about his, you know, virulent racism, that's a problem. And that's the type of stuff that gets you taken to court. That's the type of stuff that hurts the bottom line. Of course, you got to step in, you know, in front of this type of terrible behavior.
Yeah, I mean, I just wonder if Kudlow's going to get any kind of pushback, reprimanded, or even taken off the air over this type of thing. And also if representatives like Representative Byron Donaldson want to understand where they've been caping for the party and the way this network does things to make sure that you know who you're talking to. He doesn't want the black on the show. Just remember that. I don't want that black. I want another Republican on. Anyways, we're gonna jump out for a second. We are gonna come back with members only for the next half hour of the show. Make sure you guys can sign up, get in. I think I'm correct on that. But anyway, goes, we'll see you guys in just a few more moments. Back with Waz.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.